Let's talk about asbestos. To most of us, and I include myself in this, it is a word that is loaded with a kind of, I don't know, fear maybe too strong, but certainly apprehension, given what happened in the last 20, 30 years ago in terms of our understanding of what asbestos could and still is doing to some people's health. In a moment, you'll hear from Jack Uldane. He's in the studio with me. Good afternoon to you, Jack. Thanks for coming in. A researcher at Res Publica, the think tank, and Ben Kentish, LBC's Westminster correspondent, is here first. Just to fill us in on what Ben and others, what Jack and others were doing in the House of Commons yesterday in relation to a campaign about awareness on asbestos.
That's right, actually. There was a big meeting in the House of Commons yesterday bringing together many of the people that are campaigning on this issue and are concerned about this issue. Now, they say this isn't a historic problem. It's not something that was dealt with when the use of asbestos in new buildings was banned in 1999, because there's still 1.5 million buildings in the UK that contain it. And there's a particular issue, I'm afraid, among public buildings. 94% of hospitals, 80% of schools, 74% of universities thought to contain what is actually a very toxic material. Now, that meeting was attended by several MPs. Angela Eagle is the Labour MP, and she was the minister that introduced the final ban on asbestos in 1999. And she was telling me after that meeting about the specific problems relating to schools.
If there is, as we think, asbestos present in 80% of schools, it's very important that it doesn't become airborne and that it isn't disturbed. And if it is disturbed, it's possible that by living and working in that environment over time, there may be a higher risk.
Now, this has particularly come onto the agenda recently, Sheila, because experts have noticed a real uptick in the number of teachers and also nurses who are dying from asbestos-related illness. So Angela Eagle, particularly focusing on schools. And one of the things she said that surprised me and might surprise you is there's no database. We don't know exactly where this material is because there's no central database. And she was explaining to me some of the issues around that. So those campaigners really asking for four things of government. They're asking for that centralised database. They're asking for the introduction of a law that would mean buildings that contain asbestos have to remove it, not just managing it. They want proper funding of health and safety. And they also want better regulation because, quite shockingly, I think, in this country, school children are allowed to breathe 10 times more asbestos fibres than in Germany, for example. So the regulation much tighter elsewhere than it is here. And that's what that meeting was about changing yesterday.
Thank you, Ben. Ben Kentish, LBC's Westminster correspondent, present at that meeting and largely behind this is Jack Uldane, who's in the studio with me. And in a few moments, we'll hear from Kate Williams, who has had a cancer that was caused by asbestos. Jack, good afternoon. Thanks for coming in. What you want, really, it seems to me, is much higher levels of management and removal of this stuff.
Yes, in terms of management, it's the monitoring that we need to upgrade in this country. Ever since the ban, we have up to 6 million tonnes of asbestos across our private and public estate. As Ben said, 1.5 million buildings, enough to fill 14 Wembley stadiums to the brim. And the monitoring of this in situ in public buildings is currently 10 times less accurate. Our monitoring equipment picks up 10 times less airborne asbestos fibres than do countries like Germany, France, and the Netherlands. So when we talk about management, it's with a view to removal, but it has to be prioritised and phased over time because there's so much of it that we have to remove. And the way that we do it has to be much more accurate and much more conscious of type and condition of asbestos. At the moment, inspectors will go into schools and hospitals where there is signs of visible damage, and that to them is good enough, that when it's obvious, then you go in, you inspect, and you create a risk assessment for removal. But we're not going in to test whether or not there are fibres already being released, which, because of the nature of asbestos, we can neither see nor smell nor detect with the senses.
And you talked about the technology that's being used in countries like Germany. Do we have? Well, I mean, clearly we have access to it if it's in Germany. But are we using access to it, to that technology?
Well, this is interesting. See, this is the first week back to work since the UK has decided to leave the EU. And I think the biggest mistake now would be to think that we have nothing to learn from other EU countries and from EU regulation. But in relation to this, it's not a question of access, but a question of funding and recognition that we are falling so far behind.
And clearly there was no EU directive requiring us to do this, was there?
There was an EU directive to remove asbestos completely by, I think, 2035. And the UK has not been part of that decision. So what we have now is an EU which is prepared to remove all asbestos by that year. We have no such plans. The Labour Party did, in their 2017 manifesto, include the pledge to remove all asbestos, though within an uncertain time frame. That needs to be brought back on the agenda.
And do you fear that Brexit might mean this goes even lower down that agenda, that the foot is firmly off the brake?
This is the risk, that it does go further down the agenda, because this is an ongoing problem of trying to ignore the problem that's in front of us. Exactly.
What does the government say about its action or inaction?
The HSE have said that lack of funding and the guidance that they've drawn up means they're doing everything that they can. But what we can gather from our report is that actually there's a lot more that they could be doing and should be doing.
So let's bring this back to, you know, the brass tacks of our daily lives. It used to be in people's minds that people who'd been exposed to building materials, for example, in shipping, in construction, needed to be careful, be aware, go and see their doctor if they had any symptoms that might be asbestos related. But what you both seem to have said is any school, or pretty much any school that you're sending your child to, any hospital that you work in or spend time in as a patient, any public building that you spend any time in, could still have potentially harmful levels of asbestos in them.
Absolutely. I mean, in classrooms, it only takes a drawing pin to be pushed into a wall or for a football to be kicked against the wall of a PE gym, for kids in rough and tumble situations to disturb what is already in the walls. Schools contain teachers, yes. Teachers who are five times more likely than average to develop mesothelioma over the course of their lives. But of course, they also contain children. Children as young as four in the case of primary schools. And what we know about mesothelioma, the disease most closely linked to asbestos inhalation, is that it can take between 20 and 40 years to develop. So we are seeing already cases of people as young as 30 who are developing this disease. And this is the thing we need to stop. And this is why we are determined with this campaign to bring this further up the agenda and to improve the way we perceive this material.
Well, I will get a sense from our calls whether people have any sense of, you know, I've never wondered about asbestos in a building I go into, because for me it was absolutely construction, shipping, or, you know, I thought asbestos was dealt with, but absolutely not, is what you're telling us.
Well, me too. I mean, I had no sense that there was anything like asbestos in the schools that I grew up in. But since learning about this, I've also come to realise that, you know, there are all sorts of risks I ran as a child growing up, and even now. Of course, there is no central register, as Ben pointed out, for where asbestos is and what condition it is in. And there's very little data that the authorities are willing to part with about where the asbestos is, and attempts are being made. But of course, that's the problem. There are so many dangerous unknowns around this material that this is something we have to get to the bottom of.
Thank you. I know you're sticking around for about 15 more minutes or so in case one of our callers is something you could enlighten people about. Thank you. That's Jack Aldane, researcher at Res Publica. More from him in a moment. And thanks to Ben Kentish, LBC's Westminster correspondent. We'll hear from Kate Williams in just a second, who has had the cancer that Jack was referring to caused by asbestos. 16 minutes past three.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Ben is still here. Ben Kentish, LBC's Westminster correspondent. You have had a statement from the Health and Safety Executive.
I have. I put some of the suggestions that the campaigners have been talking about to them, and they suggested in reply that they believe the current regulations are sufficient. They say there is clear guidance available for owners of buildings that contain asbestos, and that there is no clear evidence on what additional benefit a national database would bring. They say, given the sheer number of buildings that contain asbestos, it would be very difficult to maintain such a database, Sheila.
What do you say to that? No clear evidence that there are benefits in this rollout of much deeper investigation and better use of the technology available. What do you say to that?
Oh, this is an interesting reply. I mean, there's no clear evidence because it hasn't been tried. The point is that when you have a central register for asbestos complaints and the identification of asbestos in its type and in its condition, what you then build is a knowledge base for where it is, how toxic it is, and in the name of eliminating it for good, you then prioritize a phased removal process. We are used to these replies already. In fact, every single one of the replies that Ben has given from HSE, we have heard in various forms before. It's not surprising, but it's insufficient.
Well, lots of calls coming in. Before I go to them, I want to speak to Kate Williams, who herself has had mesothelioma caused by asbestos. Kate, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sheila.
Tell me about your experience and what you know about the source of your illness.
Well, my particular type of mesothelioma, they say may have been caused by asbestos. They don't know for definite. It may not have been caused by asbestos. The reason being, it is so rare, cystic mesothelioma, peritoneal mesothelioma, that they actually haven't got a big patient database in which to investigate how I may have got my mesothelioma. But I worked in a lot of buildings where there was mesothelioma, where there was asbestos. You can't get away from the fact that a lot of buildings of a certain age have asbestos. And for me, perhaps it caused an absolutely devastating cancer, which took a lot of treatment.
And was there any attempt to investigate buildings that you had frequented, maybe your schools, maybe your workplaces?
I have looked into it, and I know that where I worked, there was asbestos. But to be honest, it was so overwhelming and so traumatic, I just wanted to concentrate on the treatment and getting better.
Yeah, you had your life to save, didn't you, Kate?
Yeah.
Jack wants to come in. Go on, Jack.
Were you informed by a duty holder, to use the term, or anybody who was in charge of informing staff at the workplace where it was and in what condition it was?
Well, the buildings where I worked in, I'd be quite often doing the late shifts, and you would walk past the signpost saying, caution, asbestos removal, because workmen would be doing that type of work late at night when the building wasn't as occupied. So I was aware that there was asbestos removal going on. But you don't think about it. You have no idea that these tiny little airborne sharp fibres can be breathed in, can go down and can cause such devastating effects on the lungs, pleural mesothelioma, or in my case, in the abdomen for peritoneal mesothelioma.
And Jack, in any workplace, if you see a sign like that, should there be better protection of individuals wandering around that building?
Well, absolutely. If you have a sign there that says, beware, asbestos removal in process,
you shouldn't be anywhere near it.
You shouldn't be anywhere near it. You know, it's like the argument that we tell our customers what is in our refined sugar products. It's their choice whether or not to consume them. But this is different. This is about ambient exposure to something that, as you've described there, is very pernicious. You can't see it. No, it's entirely wrong simply to put a sign there that says this is happening.
I wish you the very, very best. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks, Sheila.
Thanks a lot, Kate. Kate Williams. Jack Aldane on that. I don't want to alarm people. I'm sure you don't want to alarm people. But the kinds of buildings we're talking about are the kind of buildings we all use. If you're not a teacher, you were a pupil for 8-10 years in a school. Your children are pupils. If you're not a nurse or a doctor, you're a patient in hospitals from time to time. What do you want from this campaign? There's no evidence that there's energy from government or from HSE to do anything about this.
What we have is a situation where if we don't tackle this problem now, it's going to go on indefinitely. So actually, we do want to alarm people to a degree, especially because the nature of asbestos exposure is that it wouldn't alarm us if we weren't saying anything about it, because it is invisible, because when it's out of sight, it's out of mind and has been for the last 20 years since the ban. What we want is for the HSE to recognise that it has fallen short of European standards, that it needs to bring us up to par, given that the UK has imported more asbestos per capita than any other country, given that we have the highest mortality rates from mesothelioma and asbestos-related diseases in the world, we must
take leadership. The highest in the world?
Yes. The highest in the world, because we have the biggest legacy of asbestos
use.
Yes, and occupational exposure.
Let me bring in Dougie in Leicester before we go to the break. Dougie, hello. You're an asbestos surveyor and analyst. What does that involve?
Well, I look for asbestos in buildings and take samples and have them analysed at our lab to identify asbestos in the buildings, where it is, its location, and the material condition, and make recommendations on that, whether it should be removed or whether it can be managed in situ. I also, the analyst side of things, is when they're doing asbestos removal, I go in. And one thing they were saying, oh, you've got an asbestos sign saying asbestos removal in progress. That sign isn't just there and it's all open to the atmosphere. Depending on what the asbestos material is in, you have an enclosure built around it, a very thick polythene, and that is put under negative pressure. And you see your man in your spacesuits and your masks, etc., going in and out of an airlock to get into the area where they're doing the removal. So it's not actually being wafted into the atmosphere. Mm. And then I go in afterwards and do a forensic-type fingertip search, looking for any settled dust, anything like that, and then take air samples and analyse.
And are you in full protective gear while you're doing this?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah,
so, and I'll say whether it's safe for human habitation or not again, and whether they can take down their enclosure, which is protecting everyone else in the building from that.
And how many of these buildings are schools, hospitals, former schools, former hospitals?
It's everywhere. I've got it in my house.
Go on.
Literally, I've got asbestos insulating board, which is a medium density board, which if left raw, i.e. not painted, not sealed, you can rub your hand across the board and millions of fibres will be released into the atmosphere. That's what I've got in my house. If it is managed and it's painted and sealed, and then it should be labelled so it can be identified easily, it can stay there and it won't hurt anyone. And you should have, obviously, in schools, etc., you have it checked on a regular basis. So I do re-inspections on asbestos we've identified in numerous buildings.
How do you feel when you hear somebody like Kate, who we spoke to a moment ago, talking about her workplace or former workplace, and seeing a sign that says asbestos clearance underway, and her just wandering around the building? I mean,
that sign is not, that's on the outside of an enclosure, and everything should be maintained so that nothing is released, no asbestos fibres are released from that enclosure. So it's not just a case of a sign on a corridor and people are allowed to walk past while the asbestos removal is in place. The regulations are stringent. No, you wouldn't hope, because if someone's doing that, they're breaking the law.
It's been known.
I mean, the asbestos control of asbestos regulations were tightened in 2012.
I mean, you're doing your bit, and I really appreciate your call. But how do you feel about the mesothelioma rates in this country? How do you feel about the fact that clearly we are taking a more relaxed approach than many other European countries?
You have to remember, as your contributor said there, that the latency time for developing the disease, I think he said 20 to 40 years, 15 to 30 years is what I was aware of. So these are people who have been affected in the past, quite some time ago, before it has become known to them.
Yes, but I suppose the fear, thank you, Dougie. I suppose, Jack, just briefly, the fear is that time ticks on and 20, 30, 40 years from now, what will the numbers be, is your question, I guess.
That's right. 15 to 30 years, 20 to 40 years. It's around this sort of time, but it's long after the fact. And there aren't death certificates showing the occupation timelines of people above the age of 75, and where, again, we could build a knowledge base. All I'd say to your listeners is please go to our website, airtightonasbestos.uk. There you can find our flagship report. You can find our podcast, Dust to Dust. Subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts.
I'll retweet some of that so people can have a look as well. Thank you very much, Jack. Good to meet you. Good to talk to you about it. Jack Aldane, researcher at Res Publica. Thank you again to Kate Williams, for talking to us about her own experiences, and to Ben Kentish, our own...